Farpoint Media.
Conan, what is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear a...
Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
That is good. That is good.
And welcome to Deadpan number 51. I'm your host, Jack Mangan, a.k.a. The Red Eye. There is significance to that because my guest this week, and next week actually, we're splitting the interview up into two parts because there was just so much good content, is the OG Captain Apollo, Tom Zarek of the new Battlestar Galactica. That's right, Richard Hatch. So we'll get to that, and we'll get to a lot of the usual Deadpan silliness. There's also another long, really big things episode for this one. So we're just packed to the gills. So there's no reason to prolong this intro babble. So let's get to the first item on our agenda. The Greasy Jelly Bean Game. Thinking aloud, I guess I really ought to have some kind of bed music or sound effect or something to announce this game, huh? And thinking aloud. Jessica already won the first round, but We're starting fresh. No one has any points. Basically, each episode of Deadpan gets tons of comments. Predict how many comments the episode will have by midnight of the following Wednesday. Get your predictions in by midnight of the following Monday. Whoever comes the closest gets a greasy jelly bean point. Whoever gets two greasy jelly bean points first will win a dinner with me. Hooray. Someplace I can afford, of course. You know, there's fine print, but we won't get into that. We'll check the totals for episode number 50 at midnight tonight, Wednesday, March 21st, and we'll determine this week's Greasy Jelly Bean winner. And so the numbers we had 815, 650, 725, 812, 700, 819, 666, and late unofficial entry of 689. I know we're in the 700s right now, so we'll check back towards the end of the episode. There are actually a few possibilities for the winner. How exciting. I'm on the edge of my seat. Okay, gonna run a Tag in the Seam podcast promo now, because, you know, Leanne always sends thank you emails when I play her promos, and who wouldn't want to get a nice email from Leanne? Claire is so gonna kick my ass.
KJ.
Yes, Chris.
Do you have a second?
Sure. What's on your mind?
I'm having a problem.
Really? What is it?
I don't understand women.
You know, Chris, I had the same problem until I found Tag in the Seam.
Tag in the Seam? What's that?
It's an insightful and informative podcast for real women.
Oh, really? But will it answer the really big questions?
What do you mean?
Well, you know. What are they thinking, and what are they feeling, and how do they work down there?
Yes, Chris. Leanne will answer all of your questions.
Thanks, KJ.
You're welcome.
You know, and KJ.
Yes?
Do you ever have that not-so-fresh feeling?
Will you two stop yammering? One of you get me a beer. I'm trying to watch the game.
For the answers to all of your questions, go to www.taginthescene.com.
Hey, this is Mike Nelson, and you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast. Keep it tuned here.
Hey, Jack, this is Jeremy from Seattle. We just had a rugby match. We won 102-0. Woot woot! And I've had a few beers with me, and now what's going on is a few of us, we're in Portland, and what we're doing is we're going to this place called the Acropolis, and where they have steak for like $4.
$4 steak,
and it's actually pretty damn good. But the Acropolis is also a strip club, so we're going to
Steak and Dave!
Woo! Okay, so that's not Deadpan, but you know what? Fuck y'all. And you're also going to hear... I'll probably call later when I'm way drunker.
Hi, Deadpan. It's Andrea.
I didn't feel like calling in the contents of my fridge or my nose or my belly button. So I'm calling in the contents of my iTunes. I have 9,211 songs. It's, let's see, 48.6 gigabytes. And I have 449 podcasts, which is 13.32 gigabytes. And actually, of that, I think, 397 of them have not been listened to yet. Because most of them are, like, song of the day things. So that's the contents of my iTunes.
All right, Deadpanites, this week it is a great privilege to have on as a special guest interview a guy that many of us have grown up with and is just an icon of our youths. We knew him as Apollo, and the younger generation now knows him as Tom Zarek. Of course, that's not all he's done, but we'll give him the opportunity to tell us all about that. Welcome. Thank you very much for coming on, Richard Hatch.
Oh, it's great to be here.
I actually sat in when T. Morris, our mutual friend T. Morris, interviewed you at a Farpoint Con in Baltimore, and I think he asked you just about every good question there was. So I mean, there's not much.
There's no new questions, but there are, you know, new answers. I mean, there's always more to say, and there's always new insights that you gather every time somebody asks you the same question. So don't, you know, feel free to ask me anything you want to ask me.
Okay. Well, you know, usually on Deadpan, we usually go in, our interviews usually go in a sort of a past, present, and future arc. Now, we know a little bit about your past, obviously. As I said, you know, right in the intro, I mean, you were the face on our TV screens and, you know, our action figures as we were growing up. So definitely feel free to talk about that, but tell us anything else about, you know, I'm reading your bio, I see you came to acting in an interesting way, and seems like, you know, you've been through a lot even growing up. So, you know, you have some interesting stories to tell. I guess just tell us a little bit about how you got where you are now.
Well, where I am now, I guess, is a result of where I've been. I mean, I'm an artist. I have traveled a long, winding road, and I think the road of an artist is a challenging one. It will test the mettle of your soul. You know, it's more than a career. It's a passion. It's a life path. It's a spiritual process. You know, it is a quest. I mean, the artistic path is a quest to do something outside the box, to communicate, you know, something of value to the world from your own heart, your own soul. And most of us have problems doing that. Most of us don't trust or have faith in what we have to say or what our gifts are. And many of us don't even know what those gifts are. So, you know, the path of the artist is one of exploring, of revelations, of gaining new insights into the world, into your own relationship to the world, dealing with your own fears and insecurities, because the path of the artist constantly challenges your sense of self-worth. Most people are terrified of being rejected, terrified of not knowing where the next job is coming from, terrified of not being good enough. And the world of art is very subjective. One person loves you, the next person thinks you're the worst thing that ever happened to the planet. I mean, it's
right.
The artist has to find a deep resolve, a deep center of self-worth, of self-esteem, of confidence in who you are and what you're about, so that all the storms that blow don't knock you over and you stay the course. And, you know, the path of the artist has always been a path, a spiritual path, of learning about life, learning about the world, learning why the world is the way it is, where we've come from as human beings, where we're going. And obviously that ties into science fiction, fantasy, you know, all those wonderful words we use to describe these genres that have begun to become extremely popular in this day and age. And so for me, you know, it's a 24-hour-a-day job. It's a 7-day-a-week job. It's not a 8-to-5. And whether I'm writing, producing, directing, acting, teaching, lecturing, or taking a seminar or reading a good book about life, it's all part of the same process. And I'm doing all of it. I'm acting, I'm writing, directing, producing, I'm teaching, lecturing, and it's all part of the same process of communicating, you know, what I've learned the hard way, communicating mm-hmm. what my own gut, my own soul, my own spirit, my own intuition tells me. And I think, in a sense, we're all teachers. We share what we've all had to learn the hard way. And in some cases, you know, some of us have a greater call to want to step up to the bat and maybe make more of a career out of it. So for me, it's a professional hobby. I love getting up and teaching and sharing and lecturing, helping other people to realize their dreams and their full potential and to break through whatever limitations they have. And God knows, art helps to heal. Art is not just about entertainment. It's a healing mechanism. It lends insights to our deepest fears and insecurities. It helps us learn how to love ourselves and forgive ourselves. It helps us see the world in a larger way. It helps us understand our neighbor. And hopefully, at least the kind of art that I love the most, it also inspires us, you know, to see what's possible out there, what's possible inside our own being. How far can we really go? How high can we jump? What's the universe out there? What's it saying to us? You know, where are we going as a species? All of that stuff is wound up in this, and I know it sounds pretty comprehensive, but that's where I am. I'm at a point in life where I am dedicated to doing only those things that have great meaning to me. Mm-hmm. I've spent a lot of time in my life, you know, wandering, trying to figure out, you know, who I am. Am I good enough? Dealing with all the fears that come up that basically constantly challenge just about everybody, but maybe artists even more, because they constantly find themselves in between jobs, having to look in the mirror and take an acid test of their soul. You know, who am I? Why? How come nobody's hiring me? Why am I not working? It's not even rational, but I tell you, when you're not in a job making an 8-to-5 paycheck, you know, it does tend to bring up your deepest insecurities. And it makes you have to come to terms with yourself and the world in a deeper, more profound way. That's why I honor the artist's path. And I think there's an artist in everybody, whether they pursue it or not. There is a part of everybody that wants to communicate something of value to the world via their talents, their gifts, their vision, their writing skills, you know, whatever it happens to be. People are seeking to share something of value with the world. So I'm doing that now. I formed a production company. I'm developing new television series, sci-fi series, fantasy series, all kinds of wonderful stories that I want to tell. And I'm working, collaborating with artists and writers and directors, producers, financiers, mm-hmm. developing a company where I can do the kinds of projects that have substance, that entertain, inspire, expand people's minds and hearts, shake them up, take them on a roller coaster ride, you know, blow people away, and at the same time leave them at the end of the day with some hope and inspiration. Because that's the one thing I feel is missing sometimes, is that things get so dark and deep and dank that people feel a sense of hopelessness. And I think the difference between yesterday and today is that yesterday we used to kind of tell these, you know, goody-two-shoes stories where everybody, you know, was either good or bad, and where, right. you know, there was always a wonderful outcome at the end. And yet, you know, yeah, I love some of those movies just like everybody else because they make you feel good. But the right. difference between then and today is that we tell, there are those telling stories that no longer kind of put everybody into, put everything into a big balloon, a big bubble, and basically make it very antiseptic. You know, today we get to see more of the flaws, imperfections, the dark side of human nature, and yet at the same time, we also get to see the true hero's path, which is the human being and every one of us struggling to deal with our demons and sometimes finding a way to make it to the light. And that, it's almost a more honest path that we're all on, and so in a sense it mirrors the world more honestly today, and yet it's no less inspiring and maybe even more so because it's more real, more genuine, more in touch with who we really are as human beings and not this make-believe image of how we want human beings to be, which some of the old series 20, 30 years ago did, you right. know, and, you know, but that's where I am. I'm looking for incredibly moving project stories to tell, and I'm developing my own Great War of Magellan sci-fi right. series, and we're developing games and toys, not toys, games, a CD-ROM game, online role-playing game, and I've spent several years, which is usually most people develop something, throw it at the wall, hope it sticks. But I'm not interested in just juggling 40 projects and hoping one of them will land. I'm working on things that I care about deeply, so I'm willing to put the time, energy, and money into. As people know, I go out and film trailers. I'm funding the comic book, graphic novel, putting together a board game, role-playing game, putting all these things together because I believe in this universe. So that's basically an overview of where I am.
Okay. I definitely respect the viewpoint there, where it's not just about the riches and the girls. You know, there's you're into it for the... for the depth and the meaning of it, and the you know, as you said, you used the word inspiration a bunch of times there, and I wonder if does that translate also over to? It seems like you integrate everything together. I guess is what I'm getting at. So that
well, it's all part of the same thing. The truth of it is that you know, not too many. I mean, I love women. I mean, you know, and, right. and it's really and money is a wonderful tool that you can use to create not only your dreams but to. Powerfully contribute to the world in amazing ways. I mean, money is a neutral substance that you can use for good or bad. Mm-hmm. It has to do with where you're coming from. And some people, you know, use it to try to, as a weapon. Some people use money as a way to cover up all their flaws and imperfections and try to show the world how cool they are. Other people use money in real productive ways. Money is something we all, just like Susie Orman says, who I watch and follow, you need to learn how to use money the same way you have to learn how to use the Force. In Star Wars, mm-hmm. if you don't use the Force will use you. You know, whatever you don't learn how to handle well is going to handle you. And so the truth of it is that sooner or later you learn these lessons about how to be more successful in life. And ultimately, as you begin to cut out the bullshit, stop playing games with yourself, stop trying to prove you're something you're not, and learn that maybe who you really are is something far more interesting than anything you could fabricate, and that if you would just take a shot at starting to trust and have faith in yourself, begin to find out who you are, what you're about, what your skills and talents are, develop them, and take one step after another into bringing those talents to the world in some powerful way where you can leverage it into a job, a new business, whatever it may be. And I'm telling you, everything else comes with that. Icing on the cake is meeting all kinds of wonderful people. Through 6 degrees of separation, you start to meet all kinds of people that will come together with you and become your best friend, become your business partner, become an investor, or become the love of your life. You know, whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. believe me, when you start moving forward and really taking solid steps to develop yourself, in this world, all the other opportunities start to come. And that includes, like I said, money comes, relationships, friendships, and obviously, right. You know, you are, let's put it this way, you are 10 times more desirable when you're in your power, in your truth, in your heart, no longer bullshitting, but really living your life fully. That's when you become the most attractive. And that's when people find you. People, you stick out in the crowd. And I tell people, I teach that. Your light bulb goes on, and then you're no longer lost in the millions and billions of people out there in the world, each struggling to find their place. Mm-hmm. It's a hard thing because most people, I hate to say it, they don't want to take risks. They don't want to challenge themselves. They're afraid of failing, and they end up doing jobs they don't really want to do, that they're not really skilled for. And they're unhappy, and then they cover that up with alcohol, drugs, eating too much, and they end up in a life of denial, sadness, and anger. And I've learned that you don't have to do that. There are other options, but there's no superficial fix. There's no pill you can take. There's no quick fix. It's a process. It's a life change. And I can only tell you that at this time in my life, where a lot of people are retiring, I feel like my life's just beginning. I'm beginning to do the things I wanted to do 40 years ago but was terrified to do. I'm beginning to put together the ideas, the projects, beginning to learn about financing, learning how to put money together, learn those resources, lay a foundation to build the structure of my business. And it's the most exciting time of my life because it's no longer fantasies or dreams that I just talk about. It's an actual practical application of putting real things together and building something that is real, substantial, and has a solid foundation. So I'm, and again, I teach that. I mean, there's a great joy in sharing your journey with others, and I see so many gifted, talented people out there that are lost. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, so often I see people who are sometimes far less talented, who seem to have less fear and go out there and do things in the world, and yet many people who have so much to offer are laying back and not doing anything. So I, again, you know, that's all woven into the kinds of projects I get involved in. I want to educate, inspire, entertain, and I like that word, blow people away. I like to go to a movie, play a game, whatever. I want something to really give me a jolt of satisfaction. How's that?
Yeah, that works. Right. Yeah, and you want to touch people. You don't want to just put out a movie or a book or a music or whatever your medium is. You don't want to just put something out that's kind of washes over people like water. You want something that really makes an impact and, you know, touches people.
I used to come out of the movie theater as a kid, and when I'd see a great movie, I'd wander around for hours, lost in another world, just totally blown away by the experience, digesting the experience. And, you know, when I come out of a movie, and it's just kind of superficial, doesn't have a real strong backstory, it doesn't have a strong foundation, you don't really care about the people, it's kind of like superficial entertainment.
This is Bob. Before, Bob relied on the internet to enhance his geek status. After using Technorama for natural geek enhancement, Bob is rolling his 20-sided die, reciting Holy Grail lines, and answering Star Trek trivia with the best of them. And he has a happy missus at the home, too. Technorama for natural geek enhancement. Only available at chuckchat.com.
Yeah, what's in a bit? You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan. Deadpan is the way.
Hello. All right, so Steak and Cheese was cool. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Jeremy from Seattle, and this is my Deadpan update. So Steak and Cheese was cool, sorry, I just saw titties walk by. That's pretty cool, too. So, okay, yeah. So Steak and Cheese was cool. Steak was good. Titties were all right, but... And then I got tail dance from this hot Peruvian chick who can, like, move her vagina. And that was pretty cool. She moved her vagina and her butthole. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then I got tail dance from her. And it was, like, the worst tail dance ever. I totally wasted $20. And now I'm all pissed. So we're out of the steak and titties. Steak was good. All in all, I'd say steak and titties was a success. Now we're at the gay bar and we're hanging out outside on the street in Portland and watching, looking at boobies that walk by, and it's pretty sweet. So yeah, all right, I'll give you a later update later. Okay, bye.
All right, apologies for the semi-abrupt ending of that Richard Hatch interview. The second part is coming up in Deadpan number 52. It had actually been a natural break in our conversation, so I figured that's where we would cut it off for this show. Though we will hear from Richard Hatch one more time, briefly, before this episode is done. Alright, and so for those of you who are new to Deadpan, who are listening possibly for the first time, maybe checking out the Richard Hatch interview, I usually have a wide variety of content and lots of different stuff, not usually just an assortment of drunk voicemails. Just seems that a lot of people were thinking about me this week when they got drunk. But you know what? That's not an apology. Deadpan is a community, and we are here for each other when we're drunk.
Hello, Jack. Make it Jessica, and I'm drunk. Yeah. Why was I calling? I was going to tell you something, but I forgot now. Tomorrow we get in his bedpan, or tonight, or whatever. But I'm really fucking drunk right now, so I'm just gonna hang up the phone
and go back to posting because I'm drunk as fuck and I only had 2 shots back to back. 2 shots of 7 shots. And I'm drunk. By the way, you're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan, motherfucking way. And my husband's laughing at me because I'm talking on the phone and I'm really fucking drunk. Oh, wait, that wasn't Deadpan. Damn it.
Really Big Things. A Serial by Paul Mackey. Episode 9. Crow. Jeremy sighed as he zipped his fly. His head was swimming, both from the information he was trying to digest and the pint of beer he'd just downed on an empty stomach. As he turned toward the sink, the restroom door opened and in walked Jack. The two made eye contact, and Jack looked away nervously. "What the hell did you do to me?" said Jeremy in a low tone. Jack backed away, but only a step or so until he was against the wall. He held up his hands and said, "Stay calm, Jeremy, and I'll explain." "Start explaining," said Jeremy, stepping closer. "There was a mistake, a mishap. You weren't supposed to get the pills. I thought you were someone else." "How do I stop these things from talking to me? I'm starting to feel like a crazy person." Jack licked his lips. "Look, I don't have much time. Those pills came from some people who hired me to distribute them. They're looking for you now, and they will find you."
"Are they dangerous?"
Jack looked away again. No, but they're going to ask you to help them. You need to be careful of them. Eric, older guy, kind of grizzled and balding,
and a woman.
Suzette, younger, shorter, short black hair, and what do they call that, a bob?
"What about a blonde woman? About so tall?" Jeremy held up his hand.
I don't know anything about a blonde woman. Just be wary of Eric and Suzette. Look, I gotta go. Watch out, and I'm sorry."
Jack turned quickly and left. Jeremy started to follow him, then sighed, went to the basin and washed his hands. Everybody's sorry. Chris turned around part way and looked to the restroom door. Jeremy was taking his time, poor guy. He pulled the baggie out of his pocket and rolled the pill between his fingers. That first year of school. Days of sleeping late.
Blowing off classes that were way too
geology
easy.
Geology 101, rocks for jocks.
Physics 101, mysteries of the sky.
General education as a temporary major.
Plenty of time to pick something later.
For now, what's happening tonight?
How good is that herb?
Bong's cashed.
Scrape that resin.
Where's a K?
Don't mind if I do.
Hey, pass it over.
Got any X?
Couple of these and you'll go all
nice
night.
Fat rail.
What's this cut with? Drywall plaster?
The good times.
Now,
success of sorts.
Rent's due.
How much of an advance?
Hit the road.
What percentage of expenses?
Track the mileage.
How's my favorite brother?
Middle of North Dakota?
Just get him away for a while.
Nothing.
I'm fine.
Whatever.
Fuck off.
Impulsively, Chris tore a hole in the baggie, popped the pill in his mouth, and washed it down with some ice water. He flagged down the waitress, ordered a second beer for Jeremy and one for himself. Let's see what kind of trouble we can roust up in Jamestown tonight, thought Chris. I'll just say, "Look, Jeremy, I'm your shoebox." Jeremy sat back down in the booth. Chris said, "Look,
what do you know about Wyckoff?" interrupted Jeremy.
Chris blinked for a second, mentally shifting gears. "Well, for starters, if you were interested in Wyckoff, you should have mentioned it in Darwin. We were a lot closer then."
"What's in Wyckoff?"
"They call it Ed's Museum sometimes. Basically, an old pack rat never threw away his stuff. Then he died, and instead of just scooping it all into a dumpster, some of the ladies in town organized a bunch of it, and now people can go look at it."
"You said it's far away?"
"Pretty far. A lot closer to the twine ball." "Jeremy, there's something..."
No, I don't want you to tell me anything else tonight. I've had enough.
We're headed for bed. You're going to take me to Wyckoff. You owe me."
"Okay," said Chris.
"Not sure why I'm doing this. I mean, I normally leave my sister's relationship troubles to her." It was now mid-morning, and Chris was driving them back down I-94 in Minnesota.
"Well,
Maybe that's worth considering next time she asks you to sideline her soon-to-be ex. Chris sighed. What had been a momentary load off his conscience the previous night was turning into a load full of grumpy from his main supplier. Chris turned on his blinker and pulled the car onto the next exit ramp. "Where are you going?" asked Jeremy. "I'm going to drop by the Giant Crow in Belgrade. I may as well get some work done while I'm doing my penance." Jeremy grumbled but said nothing. Soon, out in the middle of nowhere, they were standing beneath a giant crow perched on a branch. Jeremy stood with his hands in his pockets, resolved not to say anything for fear the crow would want to add to the conversation. Another car was pulling into the small parking lot, and Chris took a couple more shots and then turned to Jeremy. "There's a little museum inside the pedestal. I'm heading inside." Jeremy grunted, and Chris turned and walked toward the base of the crow.
"So which one is he?" asked Eric.
"The taller one," said Jack from behind the wheel, "with his hands in his pockets."
"All right, I'm going to go..."
"Wait,"
said Suzette.
"His friend is going inside. I'll talk to him. I'm a bit less intimidating,"
she said, looking Eric up and down.
"Plus I can get a good read on him and not leave him talking to thin air if his friend comes back."
"Okay," said Eric grudgingly. "But be careful. We still don't know for sure if this whole thing is a mistake or a double cross."
"Excuse me?"
came a voice from slightly behind Jeremy. He turned and glanced at the woman. He tried unsuccessfully to mask a slight double take when he realized this was Suzette, who Jack had spoken about.
"I think we have a friend in common named Jack,"
she said. Jeremy's eyes narrowed. Suzette didn't look in any particular way dangerous. Jack had warned him, but just how trustworthy was Jack?
"I know a Jack."
Suzette actually physically stumbled back a step. Something wasn't right here.
"Not sure if I'd call him a friend."
"Jack gave you some pills accidentally?"
said Suzette unsteadily.
"Look,"
said Jeremy, stepping very close to Suzette.
"I was warned about you. I want you to go back to your car and stay there until I leave. Leave me and my friend alone and don't follow us. I don't want any part of what any of you are up to, including Jack."
"Okay, then,"
Suzette said weakly. She turned and walked back to the waiting car. Suzette got into the passenger seat and closed the door. She then slumped toward the dashboard, pain obvious on her face. "Suzette!" exclaimed Eric.
"Shut up!"
she hissed, and she took three or four gulping breaths.
"Just give me a second."
"But did you..." "She said shut up," said Jack, earning an angry glare from Eric, who nonetheless pursed his lips and said nothing. On the other side of the parking lot, Jeremy and Chris got into their car, and after a moment or two were heading back toward the main road. Suzette sighed, her breathing now a lot closer to normal, and got back out of the car. Jack and Eric followed. She walked over near the crow and called up to it.
"Hello? Were you paying attention to the guy I was just talking to?"
"The guy who was just here? I kind of wanted to eat him."
Eric's eyebrows narrowed.
"But you don't actually eat."
Still, he smelled like food to me.
Suzette turned to Eric.
"Something's wrong with that guy. I could barely get a read on him. Some kind of interference. I've never seen anything like it. It's like he's distorted."
"Did he say anything?" asked Eric.
"Not really. Just stay away and don't bother."
"Fat chance of that," growled Eric. "We should probably be careful," said Jack, but Eric was already turning toward the car. "We can catch them if we hurry." Suzette took a step toward the car, and suddenly her eyes rolled back until only the whites were showing. She collapsed to the ground, out cold.
You have been listening to Really Big Things by Paul Mackey. Suzette was read by Darcy Zeppelin. Music is Chronodermis by Nanochrist. Look them up at www.nanochrist.com. Please send comments and feedback to reallybigthings@gmail.com.
Hello, my name is Jimmy. I live in Denver. You are listening to Jackie Magnum's Deadpan Podcast. I like him. He makes me giggle.
Hey, this is Jeremy from Seattle.
totally dancing right now. Oh my god. So seriously.
Dumbass memories.
Hello, Deadpan. It's Amy with a dumbass memory that took place on Friday, February 23rd, 2007. I was waiting to catch a bus to get to an office. The bus stop where I was waiting has two different waiting areas, because buses from that stop travel in two different directions. When I saw the bus for the line I wanted come up to the stop, I walked across to the other waiting area and got on. I had forgotten that this particular line had buses that went in both directions from that stop. It took me about 30 seconds to realize that I was on the wrong bus, and by then it was too late. I ended up riding that bus in a big loop that went all the way downtown and back. It eventually went by the office I had been aiming for in the first place, and I got there 45 minutes after getting on the bus. Thankfully, I was not trying to make it to an appointment on time.
You are listening to Jack Mangan's podcast show. Deadpan is the way.
All right, I am so done. I am so ready to quit. Holy crap. So let's do some outro babble. Let's cover some Greasy Spoon stuff. Not Greasy Spoon, Greasy Jelly Bean, and let's call it a show. However, I do have to point out, safe and happy travels to Amy Bowen, who just gave us that great dumbass memory. She's heading over to the Far East, going to Japan for a few months for school. Though she assures me she'll still be able to hear and even participate in Deadpan. So spread the Deadpan word over there, and send us some reports if you can there, Amy. Alright, so the Greasy count, the official count as of midnight, was 800 even. That's what I called it. So the closest was, well, how about that? It was Amy Bowen. Congratulations, Amy. There you go. You get that before you leave. She picked 812. There was also an 815 and 819. So a couple of close ones, but Amy wins with 812. So Amy has one Greasy Jelly Bean point, and all the rest of y'all are waiting to catch up now. That's right, I said y'all, from New Jersey, even. I had some comments on New Jersey, and I have lots more content from you guys, which is not to say that you shouldn't keep it coming. You can email it to me, jack@jackmangan.com. Call it in. The voicemail is 206-350-TOMI, 206-350-8664. Send it to me through Skype. I am Spherical Jack M. But anyway, there's lots of great content. There are actually more drunken voicemails, believe it or not. But it's all good stuff, and it's all further proof that Deadpan is the way. There's also more fridge content, and of course, in the next episode, a lot more from Richard Hatch. Thanks to everyone who has supplied content. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks for commenting at the Deadpan comment boards. Thanks for just making this community awesome. Thanks for making Deadpan a great experience for all of us. The music to end the episode is going to be one of my instrumental pieces because they're nice and short, and this episode's running pretty long. Not sure which one. I'll just insert it as soon as I'm done with this outro babble. Control B Deadpan is the Control I motherfucking Control I way. Control B. For Mac users, that's Splat B. Deadpan is the motherfucking way. Splat B. You don't get italics. Sorry. No offense. All right, I'm tired. Thanks for being part of Deadpan. I'm not coming back after the music.
The preceding program is part of the Farpoint Media family of podcasts. To find out more about Farpoint Media and the many other podcasts available, visit www.farpointmedia.net. A world of audio wonder awaits you there.